You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. Live link also at thetrumpet.com. And this is Trumpet Radio Live for Wednesday. Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondeau with you here today. And as was being talked about in the headlines, the Republican National Convention is going on. It was night two last evening. And I'm proud to say I actually watched a little bit of it. Just a couple of speeches, about three speeches in general. And I saw Paul Ryan's speech, Chris Christie, his speech, and then Tiffany Trump. So those were kind of interesting speeches. Paul Ryan's speech, he was saying all the things you'd usually say, I guess, but it didn't seem like people were responding to it. They were kind of, it didn't seem like they were that enthusiastic. Towards the end, maybe a little bit more. And then Chris Christie came out, and you have to hand it to him. He knows how to work a crowd. He had a pretty good speech. It was pretty much all just against Hillary Clinton. He didn't say too much about Donald Trump, but he got the crowd pretty fired up. And then Tiffany Trump came out there. I wasn't very familiar with her. She is, I think, his youngest daughter. And that's a tough spot to be in, I think, to get up there and give a speech. Everybody knows you come from a wealthy family, and you know, it's hard to relate to the common man, I guess, but yeah, you know, I thought she did okay. You know, she wasn't that nervous, I don't think.
Yeah, it's with Trump, his own family, he has a lot of the family bringing in his maybe more star power than other candidates. I mean, they get celebrities to come or other people. I think on the first day they had one of the main actors in Duck Dynasty come out and give a speech. So they try to get celebrities to come, and people were making a big deal that they weren't coming and they refused to come because of Trump. But same time, I mean, he is a celebrity in himself and with his family. So it is interesting how many people in his family are giving speeches compared to maybe some other candidates.
Yeah. Well, they can't take that kind of standard line that sometimes people running for office will take of, I know what it's like, I've been in the hard times, and not, you can't really say that, but still, I thought she did okay. I mean, I don't know how old she is, mid-20s, I would guess, and all of a sudden to be up there in front of pretty much the world, you know, hey, that would be hard.
Yeah.
So, I remember when Paul Ryan did the, I think it was the vice presidential debate, last go around 4 years ago, he was drinking water all the time. They were kind of making fun of that because every couple of minutes he was taking this big drink of water, and they made fun of it on one of the comedy shows where every time they would do that, but every time it would be a bigger glass of water. Right. He started pulling out these huge glasses of water. That wouldn't be easy, you know, especially because everybody's they're looking to catch you saying something you shouldn't say, and then just, you know, recycle it all the time in the media. So a lot of pressure on those people.
Yeah, any little mistake, even body language mistake, they'll nail you for. And even the Democratic candidate in 1990 or around there, I forget his name, but had the video of him in a tank rolling around there.
Yeah, that was Dukakis.
Yeah.
Michael Dukakis.
Yeah, and that pretty much sank his whole campaign. So not even just speaking, but just seeing in public or doing something out of context, and it could just sink you.
Yeah. Yeah, they have to be really careful with what they're doing and saying. So that was interesting, and that goes on, of course, all week, or most of the week. It takes a lot of the headlines, so they're talking about that in most of the news sites. A few other headlines to talk about today. Also, we'll preview the Trumpet Daily Radio Show and the Key of David program. We have another musical selection for you from the Philadelphia Youth Camp, the Talent Showcase. We'll play that also. And then look at some things that have happened on this day in history. And it's heating up here in Oklahoma, the Edmond, Oklahoma area. We're getting up. We might get to be 100, probably not today, but the next few days. So summer is definitely on the way. One great indication for me that, or I should say summer's here, but the heat of summer is really coming on. One good indication for me that it's getting really hot is there's one particular part in my lawn that doesn't have any shade, doesn't get much water, and when the earth begins to crack apart and open up, I know it's getting hot, and that is beginning to happen. So I don't know. It makes me a little nervous. Like, how much is this going to open up, and How deep is that crack down there?
Right. Have your kids fallen into there by an accident?
Well, I'm hoping to find oil, yeah. But I don't know that I own the mineral rights. I'll have to go back and look at my mortgage. Probably not.
Could be early retirement for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can feel the heat ratcheting up each day every time I get in my truck and just sitting there without the windows down. I can tell how the temperature is rising by how much I sweat just sitting in there for about 30 seconds. And that's my temperature indicator in the truck.
Well, you know, if you ever run for public office, president or something, you can get up there and honestly say, and I'll back this up, I used to drive this truck, this old truck, with no air conditioning, 100 degrees outside. You can relate to the common man.
Yeah, that's right.
Here's one of the headlines for today. This is sort of interesting. There's a lot of advancement with technology, and some good, some bad. This is from Fox News. Dad, teen, son ordered to disclose data on gun-firing, flame-throwing drones. They modified some drones that can fire guns and have flamethrowers on them. So the federal judge is interested in what exactly they're doing with these drones. The way they got caught was that they put them up on YouTube. They made YouTube videos of these drones. They've been looked at over a million times, and so now they've got to come, I guess, to give a deposition or something and talk about what are you doing with these drones and how exactly did that work? And that's one of the questions that comes up with drones is, what are people going to do with them? Because there are people out there that can figure out how to make it do some pretty dangerous stuff.
Right, yeah. Every day on social media or the headlines, you see some kind of back or garage scientist make some kind of weapon. Or I saw one, they made a bazooka laser that could melt materials and or giant flamethrowers and other things. And it's dangerous for them because it could malfunction, but also... why do you need to make weapons? And with drones, without even the weapons, privacy concerns, people just flying them everywhere. And it is a new age. We haven't really had to consider people having this much sophisticated technology and being able to modify it where it can be really dangerous. And, I mean, if these people are doing it, how many other people are figuring it out that could use it for something sinister?
There's a guy that lived down the road from me. Maybe he still does. I'm not sure. But... I think he tinkers around kind of like that and makes things. And this was a couple of years ago, and I only saw it one time. He put a motor on what appeared to be a bar stool, and he drove it down the road. I was standing by the sink looking out the front window, and it was extra loud, so you'd notice it. What is that? And he was riding on a bar stool. I never saw him come back, so maybe he left the neighborhood. I don't know what you would do with that.
Happy hour. But
yeah, that's what I thought. Drive, I mean, you know, so people do things. Sometimes they're just kind of awkward and funny like that. Sometimes more serious, like shooting bullets from a drone. That would make me nervous if my neighbor had one of those.
Yeah, for sure. I just wonder if that guy, if he got pulled over on his bar, still if it counts as drinking and driving or what?
It's a really good question. This says a federal judge here has ordered a Connecticut father and son to testify under oath at depositions and hand over documents about drones shown in these YouTube videos, firing a gun and deploying a flamethrower in their backyard. Austin Howoat, I believe is how it's said, and his son, they made some videos, put them on YouTube last year. The one video has nearly 3.8 million views. That shows a flying drone equipped with a handgun firing rounds. And another video viewed 600,000 times shows a flying drone with a flamethrower lighting up a spit-roasting Thanksgiving turkey. So, you know, maybe there's a practical use. You want to cook that turkey? Just fly that drone right over the top of it.
Right.
It's hard to get it exactly right, I guess, as far as the cooking goes. Federal prosecutors on behalf of the FAA argued the subpoenas are part of a legitimate investigation into potential violations of FAA regulations banning people from operating, quote, aircraft in a reckless manner. So that's how they're trying to say that this might be legal, because it would be reckless to fly this aircraft this way and fire a weapon. So it'll be interesting to see, because a lot of times these type of cases will set a precedent, and that's probably what the big issue is here.
Right, yeah. And I mean, it is neat people can modify things and invent things in their backyard, but at the same time, there has to be some wisdom, and creating weapons isn't exactly the best use of that technology, or and for obvious reasons, because it can be dangerous. And it probably is something that has to be looked at. And with this precedent, people probably shouldn't be making weaponized drones in their backyard, because it can lead to law issues. And like you said, if they stop this one, it will help maybe enforce some more regulations on how people modify these types of technology.
Yeah, speaking about technology, one of the things that came out of that terrible situation in Dallas where those police officers were killed was the fact that the police force has a robot that they can send in to eliminate somebody. I think that was surprising. To me, it was, anyway. I thought, what are they doing?
Right.
So they've got this robot. So this type of technology is out there as well. This one is from the Business Insider. It says, the Marines are testing a crazy machine gun-wielding death robot. It sounds like a sci-fi headline, but it's legitimate. It says, just last week, infantry Marines from 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, were taking the robot out on training patrols at Camp Pendleton. Later this month, they'll head to the Marines Desert Training Site at 29 Palms, California, to fire off plenty of live rounds. If it were actually fielded, it's called the, MARS, M-A-A-R-S, would complement the 12-person infantry squad that typically carries small arms, offering up a tracked vehicle that can zone in on targets with a mounted M240B machine gun firing 7.62-millimeter NATO rounds. It can carry about 400 rounds, or it can be reconfigured to tote a 40-millimeter grenade launcher instead. It goes 7 miles per hour for a top speed, but that's fast enough for troops who would walk alongside it, and it can go for 8 to 12 hours before needing to power up again. The only limitations it has is that somebody has to manually reload the thing. So that would be an interesting situation in battle, have that thing come over the hill and just start shooting. I mean, maybe not even in war so much, but just in, like, say, domestic terrorism or something like that, combating that type of thing.
Right, yeah, I think this is the next generation of weapons we're going to start seeing more is robots and remotely controlled weapons. And I mean, we already have this with UAVs, the Predator drones. People in Nevada control drones around the world that are in Afghanistan, Iraq, everywhere. So on that level of technology, we're already used to it, but this is something a little different. And it is something that the military has been working on for a long time. And it is the next, if you think about the next logical progression, if we have Predator drones, why not have something like that on the ground? It can help save infantry lives. And then the next step would be in police and law enforcement, because the one in Dallas, it was the normal, they have the anti-terrorism or bomb robots that aren't armed. And then they strapped a bomb onto it. They drove it to where the guy was and detonated it. To have something that could use lethal force in a remotely controlled way, that would certainly change everything. And I mean, there'd be a lot of ethical debates about it as well. But at the same time, with the way everything's going, it is kind of the direction we're heading.
Well, and you have to think about, what if it got into the wrong hands? You wouldn't want somebody that was looking to cause, you know, some sort of a violent attack, a terror attack or something, to have that, because you could just drive that in, and if you had one of those, I could shoot off how many of a rounds? 400 rounds? That would be chaos, you know? And how would you stop it? I guess you'd just have to blow it up or something.
Right.
So it's really interesting to see this advancement in robotics. And it reminds me of that show, that BattleBot show that's on. And I have thought about that when I've watched that show. Like, I wonder if people would use that for, you know, bad things. Well, there's a chance of that because of these robots that they're using in the military and law enforcement. So sometimes you see those headlines, the robots are taking over, and they're usually kind of a joke. But in this case, maybe so.
Right. Yeah, it is a difficult question, especially with America's cybersecurity being as weak as it is, if it's wise to use weapons like that. And even also if the U.S. introduces it, I'm sure Russia and China and our rivals will produce something just like it.
Only smaller.
Right.
They always mimic everything to make it a little smaller.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, but I mean, this does go back to debate on whether a remotely controlled robot or just a robot itself can perform the same tasks as a human. And because in combat and other, and even with law enforcement, it does come down to a human deciding what to do. And that's probably will always be the way it is. But it does enter some interesting questions on where we're heading with these different advances.
Next thing they'll do is they'll make it look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then it'll be Terminator.
Right.
Except in real life.
Yeah.
That's the next step. Who knew that was actually a prophetic movie?
That's right. Yeah.
Not that I'm recommending it. I haven't really actually seen too much of that. Just I'm aware that they were out there. Moving away from the death robots to something a little better. This is from Fox News, too. It's talking about this type of honey. It says, is this honey Malaysia's healing secret? Of course, honey has some good properties in it. If you don't have too much of it, that can help. They say that when the Malaysian rainforest blooms in spring, Asian honeybees known as Apis dorsata, if I said that wrong, I'll stand corrected. They are the world's largest bees. They make large parabolic-shaped honeycombs which hang from the high limbs of the tualang trees. During this season, a single tree may host 100 hives. Don't climb that tree unless you know what you're doing. They say as much as 992 pounds of honey can be obtained from a fully laden tualang tree. So that's a lot of honey. Because the honey is so difficult to obtain, it is expensive. And so harvesting the honey for those who dare to do so is pretty profitable. But it's difficult to get up there. It's risky and tricky, and but very photogenic, they say. And you can get nice pictures. Prior to climbing the trees, honey hunters fashioned smoke torches out of dried coconut husk fibers wrapped in wide green leaves. So that's pretty common. When people harvest honey, they put smoke in there to make the bees go to sleep, I guess.
Right.
Is that, yeah, they go to sleep, or it slows down their ability to want to sting you. To reach the hives, honey hunters must climb up the immense trees, use ropes, handholds, etc. Usually one hunter climbs, and a ground crew of two or more others will collect buckets of honey that are sent down to the ground. So it's pretty difficult to do this. But it's supposed to be pretty good honey in what it does. They say the most common way the Malaysian people use this unique honey is as a daily health tonic. One full teaspoon of this tualang honey in a couple ounces of water makes for a elixir that delivers the honey's benefits along with the taste, which is, I guess, pretty good. They use it as a topical aid as well. It can heal wounds. It can kill bacteria and skin infections. And I suppose after you harvest it, you probably need it for the stings, too. But they say this honey is excellent for relieving a sore throat, for subduing symptoms of colds. A modest amount consumed daily appears to help stabilize blood sugar, and the honey demonstrates blood pressure-reducing effects. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know much about it other than this article. They say you can find it online, and some stores specializing in Southeast Asian food. I guess it's fairly expensive. Don't know, again, too much about it besides this article. But interesting. It's interesting just in light of all the different medications that you see out there. We were talking earlier today about some of these ads you see typically during the nightly news because they know the older people are watching. And just it's unbelievable the stuff that they're trying to sell. It's supposed to help with one thing, but then the side effects. I think kind of a common joke in a way, but there's more side effects than anything else. And so you see an article like this about something that's pretty natural, having some healing properties, and it wouldn't hurt to try it, right? It might be cost a little bit, but it couldn't cost as much as that medication, I don't think. And what's the side effects? I mean, if you ate too much, I suppose you not feel great, but You're not going to have kidney failure or, organ failure, some of these other side effects, I don't think, from trying something like this.
Yeah, it is amazing that we find out, around the world, different types of natural foods that help our bodies a lot, or they have a lot of properties that can do things that we spend millions of dollars producing drugs that try to do the same thing. And so with this honey, it is really interesting. They should probably make a drone that should collect the honey.
That's actually a really good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Use robotics for food and instead of for war.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. You just put a bunch of people out of work in Malaysia.
That's right. Yeah. It's they can apologize.
Operate the,
yeah.
They can operate the drones from the ground.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's just interesting with, I've heard this, well, honey, not this specific kind, but other kinds of honey, that it can do a lot of amazing things for you. And who would think that a natural sugar is actually good for you instead of all these fake sugars or sugar replacements that we push in the West, when probably the best thing, just eat natural sugar in the moderation, and it'll help your body stay together longer than using drugs or other artificial enhancers.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting to see some of those different properties there that are naturally in certain foods. This is an interesting headline here from CNN.com. History made. In an astonishing Bronze Age discovery, a 3,000-year-old community has been unearthed. So this is, you can find this article at CNN. They've got some pretty neat pictures. British archaeologists working on the Must Farm project in England's Cambridgeshire Fens can hardly restrain themselves. They're excited about this find. They said they found truly fantastic pottery, exceptional textiles. It's an incredible site, the dig of a lifetime. They say typically on prehistoric sites, you are lucky to find a few pottery shards, a mere hint or shadow of organic remains. Generally, archaeologists have to make do, and then they have to interpret what they find as best they can. But this archaeological dig has turned out to be completely and thrillingly different. For the last 10 months, day by day, week by week, the excavation has yielded up a wealth of astonishing finds, including pottery, textiles, metalwork, and ancient timbers. The dig offers, as site manager Mark Knight from the Cambridge Archaeological Unit put it, a genuine snapshot of a lost world, a prehistoric settlement from the Bronze Age some 3,000 years ago, they think. So they have axe heads. Some of them even have the handle still on them. Things are just preserved very well. Some rope, some like the way the homes were built, these roundhouses. So they're getting a really good look at the civilization from what they think is about 3,000 years ago.
Yeah, archaeology is really fascinating because that's what allows historians and the common people to have facts to base their assertions in, and to us to be able to reimagine what life was like back there, because it is the foundation of how we figure out how civilizations were if we don't have written records or confirms written records. And I mean, also we can go to museums and see these artifacts, and we can just learn a lot about how societies functioned. And I mean, especially on something like this, I mean, when I was in Israel on the dig on the Ophel Mount there, we found materials, but in Israel, I mean, pottery is pretty much laying on the surface. There's just so, because there's been so many civilizations through there. But for certain time eras, all you have to go off of like is certain dirt color you find, the how the rocks contour, very subtle changes that you have to try to make assertions off of. But with this, if you have that much wealth of evidence, it just makes the job so much easier and enjoyable, and just lets the insight so much deeper into how these people lived, and allows historians then to have a more accurate take on what was going on.
Yeah, this sounds like the type of dig for me. Indiana Jones, you know, dig, pull it back, and there's like fully formed axes.
Right.
Perfect. I found an axe. It's old. Yeah, that sounds like it would be for me. But so it's interesting. You can check that article out on CNN.com. History made in an astonishing Bronze Age discovery. A 3,000-year-old community has been unearthed. They've got some pretty good pictures, a little bit of video too. And again, they can see even the architecture of the day, like how they built their roundhouses, other things like that. And they give you more detail in that article. So it's pretty interesting, especially if you have some interest in archaeology. And, you know, too, they talked about how they had farms. They could tell that they each had a certain amount, probably of, I think it was goats and a few other things. And so they had a pretty good civilization from what it looked like. Sometimes I think, thinking back to that time period, maybe think of people just kind of roaming around and, you know, trying to live kind of like a caveman or something. But they seem like they had a pretty good community going there, and they think it burned down. They think they don't know why exactly. They're still looking or trying to look into that, whether it was they were attacked or whether it just was a natural occurrence. But they built this whole little community, and then apparently it burned. And that's why why it no longer is there. So pretty interesting. You can check that out at CNN.com. With all that's been going on in this country, there's a lot of course, controversy about police and different communities. And one of the big slogans that is out there in the news is Black Lives Matter. And so you knew at some point somebody was going to make a parody about that. And it happened. This is from the Washington Post. The title of the article is Black Olives Matter, Billboard Sparks Outrage and Pizza Sales. An Italian restaurant in New Mexico has come under fire for a billboard playing off the Black Lives Matter slogan amid nationwide outcry over the recent fatal shootings of black men by police officers. Pisano's in Albuquerque, that's the restaurant, their sign said, Black Olives Matter, try our tapenade. That's how you pronounce that. It was on a marquee last week advertising one of its specials. And so people were, of course, outraged by this. And some were anyway. They said, look, we're just trying to promote our pan-seared ahi tuna with black olives. we put Black Olives Matter on our sign. But others called it offensive, tacky, and hideous, and in very bad taste.
Well, we have to try that tuna. That fancy tuna melt and see if it is in bad taste.
Actually, sounds delicious.
But yeah, I think it's pretty clever marketing scheme, actually. Maybe it's not the best timed, but I think it's pretty funny. They're doing quite well with the sales there because of it.
The whole point of marketing is to get attention, right? So they got some attention. You know, on a related note, we talked last week about that restaurant in Washington that was refusing to serve officers. Well, they got plenty of flack for it. Now they've reversed course and officers can eat there for free. Maybe it was because of us. Maybe
yeah,
we did it.
That's true. It's, like they say, no, all publicity is good publicity. Because if your name's out there, people will look into you and see if they want to purchase anything.
These signs, you see them all the time a lot of times you drive by a church and they've got their billboard out there and they try to make a clever play on words. And a lot of people do that. So they were trying to do that. And again, definitely going to get some controversy with this type of a sign.
Yeah. Actually, a little while ago, I saw a church billboard that said All About That Grace. Playing on the song there.
Yeah, right.
But there are some funny ones out there, but it does remind me of, I saw someone tweet yesterday, I think, that Starbucks is starting to print Black Lives Matter on their receipts.
Really?
At least they said, I don't know if it's just that one particular one or what's going on, but I did see that.
Well, they tried to wade into the race situation a while back because they wanted customers to, or baristas to strike up conversations about race with the customers.
Right.
File that in worst idea ever.
Yeah, you came here to get a coffee, not talk about racial issues. And even in Starbucks, it seems like that would be a bad idea. Trying to order your coffee type and then they're talking about race and it just get very confusing, I think.
Yeah, it would be not a good idea. There's been some really good parodies on that. That's been quite funny. So anyway, they're trying to weigh into that, I guess, again. There's another billboard, I think it was in Indiana, more serious, I guess. They said hate cops ? Next time you have a problem, call a crackhead. Which is pretty blunt terminology, but the point was you don't like the police, well then call the criminals when you have a problem.
Right. Yeah, actually that reminds me, I saw one in Canada, Nova Scotia, someone sent it to me and it was the Marijuana Association and their billboard has a guy holding his forehead And all it says is, dude, we totally forgot our slogan. And that's all it says.
Classic.
Thought that one was pretty funny.
That, you know, for people that have a good, I guess, sense of humor, that'd be a pretty fun job to come up with the funny billboards.
Yeah.
So anyway, the billboards are supposed to get attention. And this one did with the Black Olives Matter slogan. Those are some of the headlines today. We're going to take a quick break here. We've got a musical selection to play for you. This is from the Philadelphia Youth Camp. It's going on for another week or so here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. The other week, they had the talent showcase, some of the campers playing some of their instruments and a few other acts. And this was a violin piece. It's Sonatina Allegro Resolute, played by Ezekiel Malone. He's age 13. And again, that's from the Philadelphia Youth Camp Talent Showcase. And we'll play that for you now here on Trumpet Radio Live.
Thank you.
Thank you.